Marketing Online Live number 67. Which is better, improvement or invention?
Welcome to MarketingOnlineLive.com.
Marketing Online Live.
The Internet's first podcast about online marketing with your hosts, Paul Colligan and Alex Mondosian.
Hey everybody, it's Paul Colligan and this is Marketing Online Live, your podcast about online marketing. I'm here today with my co-host Alex Mondosian, and we're going to go back a little bit as we go forward a little bit. We're going to be talking about strategies as much as we were talking about things said in the past. Alex was famous for a previous episode of Marketing Online Live for saying that comments on blogs were just too much to handle. Yet going to alexmondosian.com today, I noticed something on his most recent post. I noticed 62 comments about the question, improver or inventor in your business. So what I thought would be fun today would be to talk about that question with Alex, find out, if he's not taking comments, where these 62 comments came from, and then just talk about the big question of improver or inventor in your business. We'll, of course, give it an online marketing spin in today's episode, and then maybe get the conversation going on further. Alex, are you there?
Well, I love retracting previous declarations I've made, and this is one of those shows, so let's get going.
So you used to say comments weren't worth it.
Well, I said comments just weren't worth the hassle of responding to, and I have since retracted that statement behaviorally because I allow comments. Now, I don't allow comments like some bloggers do where they just, you know, go online no matter, you know, who's coming through. I do have, spam software, so that, you know, takes care of some of the comments. In fact, a lot of comments that come through from spammers. That just give links, it looks like. And then there are comments that come through, and I would say 95% of them I allow to go through, and they are all allowed manually, but it's not as difficult as I originally thought. And if you go to my blog, alexmondosian.com, you'll see that many of the posts have lots and lots of comments. This most recent one on July 3rd at the time of this recording that we're doing for MOL. Improver or inventor in your business is the question. Never invent, always improve is the four-word sentence that is indelibly etched in my mind and also in the minds of all my training partners and vendors. And I also have that quote framed hanging on the wall of my home office. And I guess that's what we're talking about today.
Yeah. Well, let's talk one more moment here about the comments, and then we'll go to the topic. But, you know, one of the more famous books for definitely the Web 1.0 world was the Kluetrain Manifesto, where, you know, the concept came out that markets are conversations, and the Internet would allow you to communicate with your audience in a way you simply couldn't ever before. And that book is one that a lot of people embrace. It's a fabulous book. But the thing that I always thought was funny was, yes, markets are conversations, but in my booth, in my tent, you know, it's my conversation. If I'm selling rugs, the conversation is going to be about rugs, not about the spice dealer down the aisleway or whatnot. So this idea that you have to let anybody say anything on your blog, on your website, I think is absolutely ridiculous. I think the power of controlling the conversation, controlling isn't even the right word, directing the conversation is where the real strength in this is.
Yeah, I think influencing is the best word I can think of personally. And what's astounding to me is I wanted just to increase the amount of traffic that comes to my blog and generate comments and, of course, get, you know, optimized on Google. And, you know, comments do allow that. But more importantly, I wanted to do a dialogue without the spam blocking elements that are so rampant and out of control, you know, with email and having to rely on ISPs, etc. So, you know, the blog, at least my blog and any other blog that I know of, is open game, and comments are open game, and I like to have them moderated because I think that, you know, it's a good idea to do so. And, you know, as a result, lots of people are making comments. What's most interesting to me, though, is that in asking for comments, okay, for example, when I send out an email and the subject line says, you have to check this out, or are you an improver or an inventor? And all the email message says to my list, I mean, I'm not asking for a sale, I'm not asking for anything other than a candid comment, candid feedback, you know, coming back at me. And all the email says is, hey, it's Alex here. I just made a post on my blog that may be of interest to you. I'm curious if you feel you're an improver or an inventor. Give me a candid comment if you like what you read. Respond to this post. And then I give, you know, alexmondosian.com. And I have an arrow pointing to it. Says, see July 3rd post. Speak soon, Alex. And that's it. I mean, it's all above the fold. And when I make that email and I send it out, I get lots of comments. If I just say I have a new blog post, I don't. So it's not just the comment part of it. It's also the request to make a comment and give them the capability of making comments and then writing about something that is heart-centered enough where people are finding enticing and wanting to you know, comment on. There are other, you'll see, I mean, I have one that has a close to 100 comments, which is a lot, you know, for an ongoing blog, for me anyway. But I have found that by just requesting comments, that seems to do better, which is a call to action, which is a monetization strategy, which we've taught on Marketing Online Live many, many years and through Podcast Secrets. And it's kind of like a post-read action. Instead of post-listen to action, it's post-read action, you know, PRA. So we'll see how well that, you know, goes over. I may even post about it. But I have found by asking for a comment, you do get comments because that's a direct request. And I'm not even responding to them. I mean, I don't have time to respond to all of them, but they seem to keep commenting. So, you know, God bless them. Just we're going to keep going with this process.
So that's kind of interesting. And in the midst of all this, what came to mind as you were saying this was, you know, there was almost a moment where Alex was trying to invent, you know, a new kind of blogging, you know, a one-way blogging where comments weren't taken in, and that invention process kind of went the wayside of an improvement process of, no, wait a minute, this comment thing, this dialogue, this conversation is good, real, and valid. It just needs to be, you know, improved a bit.
It does. And, you know, what I did is I had the wrong assumption. My assumption was for a dialogue to happen, I have to make a post, someone has to make a comment, and then I have to respond to every comment.
I gotcha.
And that's how I define the dialogue. Whereas now I define the dialogue as soon as I get a comment, that's dialogue. The monologue is the post, and the DI meaning two, the dialogue of conversation is where someone makes a comment, and it's not necessary for me to comment on each post. I read them all, but it's not necessary for me to comment on each of the posts. And so that's where I made an incorrect assumption, and I think that it's incredibly important to evaluate that, because the most elegant response I ever heard about a presidential candidate or a presidency of any kind was when someone asked Bill Clinton, hey, you know, what do you think about George Bush, you know, George W. Bush? What do you think about him? And, you know, is he off his rocker? Is he crazy, right? And, you know, of course, Clinton could have said anything to that. But instead, he said, you know, we just have a different set of assumptions. We come from a different set of assumptions, so therefore, we generate different results. And I thought that was the most elegant response I have ever heard to a question that could lead to a complete train wreck.
Yep.
And so that's what I do now. I'm just modeling Clinton. I came from a different set of assumptions before, and now that I've changed my assumptions, I'm changing my results.
Interesting. Well, let's hit a couple of these comments. Let's bring the dialogue from the written to the spoken word here. I'm just going to pick a couple of these at random. Obviously, we can't hit all 62 of them, but it's an interesting dialogue here. Now, Stephanie, one of your first commenters said, and this was really interesting to me, I'm most definitely an improver. Until I read your post, I did not feel so great about that. Thanks for changing my perspective.
Exactly. I don't know what that means specifically. I hope she remains improver. You know, I got some comments about one word, a four-letter word, the word sexy. And I got comments about that, and they happened to be from women. It said, it's in the third paragraph of the post. It says, although the idea of becoming an improver is not as sexy as being known as an inventor, it is improvement, not invention, that has generated billions for some of the most renowned thought leaders in history. Ironically, many of these folks have been inaccurately dubbed as inventors. And then I go on to talk about who's dubbed as an inventor, but were really improvers. For example, Thomas Edison, Napoleon Hill, Henry Ford, and others. They are improvers, not inventors. And so I don't know what that comment really means. I'm hoping that the spirit of the comment, Stephanie's comment, is that she will remain improver. But, you know, I think that she just wants to have the sex appeal of inventor.
Yeah.
And what I know to be true is, as an inventor, as someone who's an original, you get arrows in your back and you have your face in the mud. Now, look at what we've done, Paul. It took us 2.5 years to make any money from Podcast Secrets. I mean, of any significance. We've been talking about monetization. We've been holding the torch on monetization. But the significant money that we make with other thought leader trainings, we didn't make until this most previous year, because I think the market caught up to our way of thinking. So we did invent. We didn't improve. I think next year we'll be doubling what we generated this year, simply because each year it becomes an improvement. So sometimes you have to be both inventor and improver, but it's much safer to be an improver, because that's where you have a better mousetrap, and that's where you have an existing market of competitors. Now, one thing you didn't say is that side testimony, she says in the final paragraph, for those of you who blog readers that have not taken Alex up on his various training opportunities, I strongly encourage you to do so. He puts an amazing amount of himself into his programs and makes it so easy. If you are willing to work for it, bravo. Now, here's what's important about that. That's not a self-edification. What's most important in that one paragraph is if you are willing to work for it. Now, you know what my trainings are like, and you know what your trainings are like. If people are willing to work for it, if they're willing to improve, not invent, improve, then they will have the keys to the castle. But if they're not, if they're just willing to have original ideas and just go in a different direction and just want stuff done for them, which is really invention, then they will not succeed. So everything that I teach and all my students, I'd like to think, is improvement. And, you know, if you go to the next comment by Mark, not long after, Stephanie's was at 2:32 a.m. East Coast time, and Mark's was at 2:59 a.m., which is very interesting, you know, East Coast time. These guys are reading it like midnight. It says, I'm both inventor and improver. I would give it examples, but that would be shameless plugging of my own products on your blog. Interestingly, though, it is my improved products that make me the most money. Cheers, Mark. Mark Sandquist. So, I mean, I think I love the way they're dialoguing with each other there.
Yeah. Well, I think, too, what's interesting, let's go back to Podcast Secrets. You know, when we first had the dialogue about podcasting, the fruit, the meat, you know, the important part of the dialogue was the fact that we have this new channel that somebody else invented to send down the content that we already knew to be profitable. You know, I was on the phone, I was on Instant Message today with a pretty popular, pretty well-known podcaster, and it's like, well, where's the money here? Well, the great thing was, when we met, when we dialogued, when we started to build this, the money was in training. The money was in empowering, and you had begun to build this model with Teleseminar Secrets. And, you know, I'll confess right now that, you know, every single page from the Podcast Secrets worksheets and training guides and manuals and everything was just, you know, the original Teleseminar Secrets Word docs, written over, or whatever the right, it's not really find and replace, because we changed absolutely everything.
It was templatized.
Yeah, templatized, exactly, which is another thing that you teach. And it was interesting that the stuff that we, you know, when we brought people into this templatized business that we knew worked, there was never any question there. So the stuff that we improved was always embraced and always liked. And the stuff that we had to invent, you know, there were some things that we changed. I mean, year one, you know, there was too much tech talk.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and we had to invent this format for teaching how to actually do the podcast that you're going to monetize. Year two, Tech Talk went down tremendously. We went back more to improving, and that's where the profit was. You know, what I think Stephanie is saying, and I don't want to interpret too much, but there are a lot of improvers out there who think that they need to be inventors.
Yeah.
You know, I know a lot of podcasters out there who think it's morally wrong to promote on anything other than iTunes.
Yeah, morally.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's just business we're talking about.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. You know, my speech at Google, they put up at YouTube about a week ago. And it's been fun to run to watch the stats on that. You know, at the time of this recording, there's about 3,200 views. But the amazing thing is I really didn't send anybody there. And this new channel that I really don't play in at all, you know, introduced me over the course of a week to, you know, 3,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
And if I would have, you know, said, oh, hey, guys, you know, don't put this on YouTube. Let me put it out on my podcast. That would have been absolutely ridiculous. You know, YouTube works. Teleseminars work. Blogging with content works.
Well, repurposing works, and that is a source of improvement. It's not really invention.
Yep. Let's read some more of these here. So, let's see. Interesting post you've got here. What I find is amazing that is Nikola Tesla made it so that people could live better lives, while Edison based his AC standards on that of ball bearings. They lasted longer at 60 cycles than faster. Tesla warned Edison of the hazards of energy. Look it up. Why do you think Europe doesn't use it? It's hazardous. Let's not forget that Napoleon Hill went broke and sold his lot in Thinking Grow Rich books, and then was hired by the buyer. He died pretty broke, too. Henry Ford forced the invention of the 8-cylinder engine. His engineers said it couldn't be done, but he told them to do it, and they did. Inventors tend to improve life for the masses, while improvers, if you really have to call them that, are the ones who capitalize on it. You know, I've said this before in Marketing Online Live, but I mean, one of my, you know, my biggest regret in the podcasting space is that I did too many things too early. You know, one step ahead, you're a visionary. Two steps ahead, you're a martyr. You know, and we did a lot of things, you know, in martyr mode. You know, and now that we take the class and say, okay, tell a seminar because we know it works, but here's the podcast channel. You know, then it's a different place. It's just a different place. And, you know, the thing that I think is really interesting, too, is people trying to make a living inventing. If you made a living improving, could you improve 10 hours a week, 4 hours a week, all at Tim Ferriss, and then spend the rest of your time inventing and making the world a better place?
Well, I think you invent as you improve, and I think improvement does an injustice to invention. I think just adding the word or adding the preface or prefix RE, reinvention, I think that makes it sexier. You know, I reinvented because it has the word invention in it, right?
Yeah.
So reinventing the corporation is, there's no other word for it, guys, so sorry, is sexier than improving the corporation. Improvement is kind of mechanical, wooden, it's just not appealing, right?
Yep.
But reinventing is like, hey, I'm plussing it.
Yep.
It's completely new. I look at it as improvement as completely new.
Yep.
It may have the heritage or the lineage or the DNA of the previous invention, but so does reinvention, doesn't it? It's just a different word.
Yep.
And so I think we get caught up on, you know, used, kind of like Salvation Army, this is used clothes, so we're going to give this up, and that has its own little brand, versus brand spanking new designer.
Yep.
And there's something cool about designer brand pre-washed jeans versus brand new jeans purchased at Salvation Army. There's a whole it's a whole different concept. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yep.
And so I think that for some reason, improvement has the Salvation Army brand to it. It's not appealing because it's, you know, it's used. And then even if it's designer and someone, gosh, I mean, think about the most valuable things on earth. Aren't they improvements? Aren't they things that were invented and then someone else owned it and then they reframed it? It could be a work of art from Picasso, the most prolific artist that whoever lived. And all of a sudden, you know, it's an improvement, but people look at it as an original work of art. And, you know, when people think of the great artists or the great composers, they think of originality as if, you know, that's the most important thing. But the wealthiest artists, the wealthiest composers, the wealthiest marketers are the ones who are truly the improvers. So I'm going to make a declaration here, and it may be a confession. I have no idea. But those of you who know me, my verb, the reason for my existence, is improvement. I improve, therefore I am. Rene Descartes said, I think, therefore I am. I improve, therefore I am, is my verb. Improvement. That's my verb. I think it's Tiger Woods' verb as well. So he doesn't have to invent the golf stroke or driving a golf ball, but he sure as heck can improve it, and he's done it 3 times. And after he's won big events, you know, like the Masters, he's decided to reinvent or improve his golf swing. And the funny thing about improvement, Paul, you always take a few steps back before you take 3 steps forward. That's the funny thing about improvement. And most people are not willing to go back. They love going forward, but they're unwilling to go backward. And I think that may be the meme that people resist as it relates to improvement. Yet I know beyond a shadow of a doubt what's allowed me to become a multimillionaire. And multi just means more than two, not just, but that's what it means. I don't want people to think I have 30 million bucks in the bank. But you know what allows anyone to become a multimillionaire is improvement. Bill Gates, Windows 95 took him over the hump, I think. And it wasn't the operating system he got from IBM. I think it was Windows 95, if you look at it. Now, where doesn't that look just shamelessly, similar to the Macintosh interface that, you know, on the operating system? I mean, it looked very similar to me. I mean, Windows 95. Michael Dell didn't invent mail order, but he sure as heck made that popular by improving the way computers were sold. And now his inventory, he has almost perfect information. I think his inventory is maybe 4 minutes now, maybe 8 minutes, something like that. And I don't think Steve Jobs invented the hard drive or a hard drive with the screen on it or the MP3 or the MP4 player. But he sure as hell made it more sexy. He created an operating system that you're willing to lick, in his own words. And you mentioned it in a previous MOL. He's an improver. Steve Jobs is not an inventor. He improved the way music is delivered. He improved the way music can be held in the hand. And I still think he hasn't improved the way learning can be delivered. That we've been holding that flag for a long time.
Yeah.
Okay? So all these guys who were touted to be, you know, inventors are really improvers. They just made such graphically extravagant and profitable improvements that they were just dubbed as inventors when obviously, you know, they were not. They were not inventors, in my view. Inventors have arrows in their backs and they have their face in the mud.
You know, I want to bring this to a close. We're getting near the 20 minutes here. But the fact of the matter is, I want to go back to that comment about feeling good. Anybody in online marketing, anybody in podcasting, anybody in new media, you know, looking to find your niche, looking to find, you know, your thing that's going to make you famous. Maybe the revenue, maybe the success comes from improving something that's already there. Alex has done quite well improving. Most of my successes have been in improving. You might want to consider the same path. And you might want to let somebody else be the inventor, or at least maybe not have your invention pay the bills. Maybe have that be the arty side of your life. Any comments, Alex?
Yeah. Final comment for me is Rosser Reeves invented the USP, the unique selling proposition. He was the inventor of that. People don't even remember him. They know others who have talked about it, like Jay Abraham and many, many others. But Rosser Reeves, that's his name, RosserReeves. Rosser Reeves, he also invented the slogan, melt in your mouth, not in your hands, as well as many other TV commercials that he created and invented and improved. Now, what is the USP? He invented it, so he's not remembered for it. And he didn't die in obscurity. I mean, he was very well respected by David Ogilvy and many, many other ad men of the time. But he's not known by a lot of the, the marketing circles that we have these days. Well, what is a unique selling proposition? A unique selling proposition, by definition, is improvement. You're improving, you know, unique. You're improving what is being sold out there. So it's a proposition that is unique to your competitor. Therefore, if you do not have competitors, online or offline, you do not have a market. If you try to invent a market, then you will have the Newton. You will have all the other products that have failed in history. You will have an Edsel. Look at all the inventions in history. The greatest inventions have been improvements. They haven't been inventions. And many of Edison's inventions, quote-unquote, were truly improvements in the true sense of the word, because they just plussed what was already there. It was a better mousetrap that he improved upon and invented. So really, invention and improvement is the same thing, Paul. That's my final word. And the fact that people have looked at it differently is what caused people to get into trouble. And the ego is what allows us to go broke sometimes trying to invent things that people have no clue on, you know, what it is. And so it is improvement, plusing an idea, a unique selling proposition that makes things good into great. And that's what I'm hoping that anyone who's listening right now, right here, goes back and listens to this podcast again, because it is golden for its beauty. Listen to it. Visit the blog, alexmondosian.com, and check out what Paul has done as far as his invention versus improvement. And as he's admitted, the improvement is the one that makes all the money. Ask yourself, is this an improvement or is this an invention? In most cases, you'll find that 90% of what you even think of is an improvement. All the great ideas have already been thought of. That is good news to me, Paul. That's not bad news. That's good news. And that's the final word for me.
You've been listening to MarketingOnlineLive.com.
MarketingOnlineLive.
With your hosts, Paul Colligan and Alex Mondosian. If you're a subscriber of this show, the next episode is coming soon. If you haven't yet subscribed and would like to have our show delivered directly to you, search for Marketing Online Live at iTunes or visit www.marketingonlinelive.com.